I'm here with Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, let's talk about what's happening in Libya. Things are heating up. We've got Turkey getting involved. We've got Greece getting involved. We have the European Union coming out with statements. We have the U.S. coming out with statements. We have Russia coming out with statements. This is becoming a flashpoint area right now, and things are getting very tense. And I think we have to kind of analyze the situation. First of all, I think it's proper for us to disclose, okay, Cypriot, Greek, but we are going to try to cover this as objectively as possible. Yeah. I say that because we are looking at potential conflict between Greece and Turkey with regards to Libya. And that's a complicated story. So, Alexander, break it down for us. Yeah. What's going on? Let me just read you one quick intro paragraph from Al-Masdar News. Which kind of maybe sets up the scenario a little bit as to what's happening in Libya. The Libyan Army's Chief of Staff, Major General Faraj al-Madawi, has revealed an agreement with Greece to block the sea lane linking Crete and the eastern sea borders of Libya to Turkish ships. Major General Faraj al-Madawi said in a statement to Al Arabiya that, quote, "There is great coordination between Greece and Libya in order to monitor the movement of Turkish ships for oil or access to the western Libyan ports to deliver weapons to the militias, especially the Misurata port." So, Alexander, that kind of sets the scenario a little bit. So get into the story.
Yes, I think the first point to understand is that there is a civil war underway in Libya. I mean, after the overthrow by the United States and Britain and France through their military intervention in Libya in 2011, which overthrew Colonel Gaddafi, who was the leader of Libya, we've had a situation where Libya first plunged into total and complete chaos, and then gradually it's crystallized into a civil war between two forces. Now, one of them is this government that is now set up in Tripoli, which is the capital of Libya, the official capital of Libya. That is a government that is basically dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood and by various groups of that kind, and it claims to be the government of Libya. And then there is another government, which is, or at least another parliament, which claims to be the Libyan parliament, which is it operates in a city called Tobruk, which is near the Egyptian border, and which, of course, seeks to make a more secular Libyan state, and which is actually dominated by this new Libyan strongman, who is General Haidar, who is in effect a former associate of Colonel Gaddafi's, though the two men fell out. Now, this group controls around 80% of Libyan territory and has been trying to capture Libya, and which has received support from the United States and Russia. But as I said, the government in Tripoli is resisting it. So we have this ongoing civil war situation between these two political entities. And then, of course, we have another player who's now moving in or trying to become involved in this conflict, who is President Erdogan of Turkey. Now, President Erdogan simultaneously is positioning Turkey or is pursuing a policy for Turkey, which is to support Islamic groups that are close to his own Islamic party in Turkey. And at the same time, he's pursuing what he calls a neo-Ottoman foreign policy, which is increasingly a very nationalist foreign policy, which seeks to position Turkey as the dominant power in the Eastern Mediterranean and in the near Middle East. And what we've seen with President Erdogan is that he has now forged these very close links with the Libyan faction, the Libyan government, the Tripoli-based Libyan government, which is dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood, which has strong ideological connections with Erdogan himself and with the party that Erdogan leads in Turkey. And at the same time, he's used this support for this government in order to justify announcing this enormous economic zone that he's created, or claiming that he's created, in the Eastern Mediterranean, extending all the way basically to Libya, and of course surrounding Cyprus, surrounding many of the Greek islands, pitching Turkey into an ever-growing confrontation with Greece. And there's, as a result, been incursions. Now, it's a very common, it goes on all the time, incursions by Turkish aircraft into Greek airspace, which are chased out by Greek aeroplanes. And then, of course, there's all these, Turkey is also now trying to extend its naval and shipping influence all the way to Libya. If you look at the map and you see how far Libya is from Turkey, you begin to understand what a grandiose and extraordinary extension of Turkish power Erdogan is claiming. Now, that has obviously greatly alarmed the Greeks and greatly alarmed Cyprus. It has also alarmed other countries in the Eastern Mediterranean. It's alarmed Israel. It's also alarmed Egypt, which has been backing the government, the parliament, the Libyan parliament in Tripoli, and General Haider. And of course, it's alarmed the European Union, who are seeing this as a massive overreach by Turkey. So what you're having is a regional conflict which pits Turkey, in effect, against the political faction that controls 80% of Libyan territory, but also Egypt, Israel, Syria, which also has very bad relations with Turkey, which has been assisting the rebels there, and of course, Greece, Cyprus, the European Union, which is backing Greece.
France is very involved.
France is very involved. Yeah. Very strongly involved. And as we heard from that piece that you quoted to us from Al-Masdar, the United States and Russia, all of these countries are very alarmed by what Erdogan, President Erdogan, is doing. And we now see an incipient military partnership emerging between Greece and General Haider, which is, you know, very remarkable. I mean, Greece isn't usually a country that gets too involved in these kind of conflicts. But, you know, to try and stop Turkish warships and Turkish ships extending all the way to Tripoli, which would be, you know, an extraordinary escalation. I should say that Erdogan, as far as I can see, has only one ally in this, which is the United Arab, Qatar, which is also tends to be sympathetic to the Muslim Brotherhood. And of course, the Saudis are very alarmed by what Erdogan is doing also, because Saudi Arabia, for its own sectarian reasons, hates the Muslim Brotherhood, which is an Islamic fundamentalist group, which is in conflict with the Wahhabi ideology that the Saudi royal family propagates. So we see President Erdogan, in effect, taking on the world as he tries to extend Turkish influence into Libya, and at the same time alarming a lot of people in the Eastern Mediterranean.
So we mentioned a lot of countries that seem to be alarming with Haftar and the LNA.
Yeah.
It's the group that he's leading that have 80% of Libya. And the GNA, actually, we have to mention the GNA is the UN-backed.
That's right.
They are backed and recognized by the United Nations.
Yes.
That's who the Erdogan and Turkey are aligning themselves with.
Yes.
But you have an alliance, essentially, Alexander, of the United States, the European Union, correct me if I'm wrong, Russia.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
Right. You have Greece in the mix. You have Saudi Arabia. You have United Arab Emirates. All of these countries are aligned together with the LNA at this moment, and they're aligning against Turkey. So even Turkey's probably strongest ally at this moment, you could say their strongest ally in Russia, what's perceived to be their strongest geopolitical ally as of lately, has also come out against this move. Because when you look at the map, and I'll put a map for all our viewers to see, you really see the, you know, what Turkey is claiming stretches all the way down the Mediterranean and is really a few miles right off of Crete. And they're actually signing an agreement with the GNA in Tripoli to actually explore for natural gas and oil in that region. So they've extended, you know, from Turkey all the way to the top of Africa, their ability to explore oil. And this is really irking Greece, Cyprus, Israel, Egypt, because they have an agreement where they've already been exploring for oil and natural gas in that area. But let me read you the statement from the Russian ambassador in Greece, Russian ambassador Andrei Maslov to Greece, saying on Wednesday that, and I quote, "The rules laid down by the 1982 UN Convention on the Law of the Sea should be fundamental. There are no alternatives." This is in response to Turkey's move to explore for natural gas in that whole area, stretching from the south of Turkey all the way to Tripoli. So how do you, this is crazy what Erdogan is doing, and I'm trying to be objective, but it really is a brash and bold move on his part.
I wouldn't call it brash and bold. I would call it completely irresponsible and entirely reckless. Erdogan has a consistent pattern of overestimating Turkish power. He really does talk about Turkey becoming a great power, comparable in some ways to Russia and the United States, even, and those sort of places. And of course, it isn't. I mean, it's an important regional power. It has always pursued, since the time of, Kemal, it's always pursued a sort of Turkey first policy of, confining itself to its own territory, but and the immediate periphery. As you know, in Cyprus, that doesn't mean that they don't get involved in what goes on in neighboring states. But I mean, the Turks have always, until very recently, understood the limits of what they can do. And they've always worked within the alliance systems of which they've been part. I mean, they've never wanted to go too far in annoying NATO, for example. They've always anchored Turkish security in NATO. And they've always been aspirants to join the European Union. Now, Erdogan sees things in a completely different way. He wants Turkey to become once again a great power. He's even criticized the format of the UN Security Council, implying, as I said, that the nature of great powers should be extended to include countries like Turkey. That simply isn't realistic. And this kind of massive overreach is potentially going to cause Turkey more problems. Bear in mind, Turkey overextended itself in Syria. It got involved in the conflict there. It tried to involve itself in overthrowing President Assad. It came very close in November 2015 when the Turkish Air Force shot down a Russian aircraft. It came very close to finding itself in a military confrontation with Russia, in which its NATO allies themselves told Turkey, "We will not back you in that kind of scenario. We don't want you to get in, we don't want a shooting war between you and the Russians in Syria." But, he's now doing, in effect, the same thing in Libya. He's getting himself involved in a conflict in a country located very far away from Turkey. Now, it must be said quickly that there are people in Turkey who support these policies. Erdogan is not alone in thinking along the in this kind of way. There is an electoral base in Turkey that, you know, supports and wants this kind of very grandiose policy. Erdogan himself has been under some political difficulty in Turkey. The Turkish economy is in recession. He's recently cut the central bank has cut interest rates in Turkey to try to get the economy moving again. We remember that there was a severe lira crisis, a crisis of the Turkish currency last year. There have been all sorts of problems in Turkey. And of course, in local elections recently, his party lost in Istanbul, which is Turkey's biggest city. But having said that, I'm sure there are also many people in Turkey who, one of the reasons they oppose Erdogan is because they feel alarmed by these grandiose policies he is in. The one thing I will say about Erdogan is he is a survivor, as he has shown. And as he has also shown, when he runs into opposition, he does know when to retreat. So he retreated from Syria, using Russian diplomacy to help him, you know, cover his retreat. And I suspect something similar will happen with this, you know, extraordinary thing that's happened with Libya. He'll probably find a way. Perhaps the Russians will again help him to get off this particular extraordinary thing that he's got himself into.
Yeah, because Greece, for their part, is not backing down.
No.
Nor should they, because Greece does have a very formidable, if not one of the best air force defense systems in the world. I mean, Greek air force pilots are some of the best out there, and they know how to defend. Yes. They are a defensive military first and foremost, and they're very formidable there. And let me read you an excerpt from Zero Hedge, Alexander, to just put some stuff into context, how one slight misstep could lead to a wider conflict.
Yes.
Turkish and Greek media are reporting that the pro-Haftar Navy chief has also threatened to, quote, sink any Turkish research vessels that arrive off Libya's coast in reference to oil and gas exploration. Quote, I have an order. As soon as the Turkish research vessels arrive, I will have a solution. I will sink them myself. I have this order from Haftar. General Madawi is reported to have said. So while, you know, we hope that Erdogan does pull back, there is a lot of risk for a misstep to occur here and for this conflict in Libya to really, you know, get out of control.
Indeed. Can I just make a few quick points? Firstly, I mean, what you said about the Greek Air Force, I know that sounds may sound, you know, extreme to some of our viewers, but it is in fact widely accepted in this part of the world, in the Eastern Mediterranean, that this is one of the best air forces there. I mean, the Greek pilots have excellent weather conditions to train in. They train in intensively, and they are very well trained. They do know how to handle their equipment. So, and Greece spends a lot on defense, so they know what they're doing. But regardless of that, it is for Greece an existential issue. You cannot have a situation where Turkey is making all these extraordinary claims, has basically insinuated at many times, it's said at many times, that various Greek islands ought to be part of Turkey, has got large numbers of troops in Cyprus, which is a country with which Greece has obvious connections, and at the same time, you know, the Greeks happily accept this extraordinary extension of Turkish power all the way to Libya, effectively surrounding Greece. I mean, for the Greeks, it's an existential issue. They cannot retreat in the face of this sort of thing. And over and above the fact that they have, you know, a good air force, they also have the backing of all the great powers. They have the backing of the European Union. As you said, the French have been particularly outspoken. The United States has made it very clear that they're on Greece's side in this conflict. The United States is conducting. I mean, a lot of people in the US are very angry with Erdogan and Turkey over many things, over the issue of the Kurds, over the purchase of the S-400 missile system from Russia, over the building of the Turk Stream pipeline. So Greece is not without friends. And as you rightly say, Turkey's biggest friend at the moment, which is Russia, is looking upon all of this with horror. So this idea that, you know, Turkey can move on by itself and extend its influence in this way, it just isn't conceivable. And I hope that when Erdogan hears, you know, officials of General Haftar's government talking about sinking Turkish research ships, he pays heed, and he doesn't take the incredibly reckless step of trying to send in Turkish warships to protect them, because that would escalate this conflict to extraordinary levels, and there would then be a real danger that Turkey could find itself in a shooting war in which it's ultimately outgunned, because it would be up against, in the immediate region, Greece, Egypt, General Haftar's forces, possibly even Israel.
Israel, yeah.
Behind them, the European Union and the United States. I mean, that would be a reckless thing to do. Now, the Russian statement that you spoke about before, I mean, it's again very clear in the sense that it's saying that Turkey, what Erdogan is doing, is contrary to international law and international maritime law, which it obviously is. But it's also very measured. I mean, they're not going around saying, you know, that Erdogan is this military maniac and all that kind of thing. They're being very measured in their use of language. And I hope that, again, Erdogan heeds this. And as I said, if he needs Russian help to try and find a way of backing down, well, I suspect it's there.
Classic Russian diplomacy.
Well, I think the Russians would be absolutely horrified if they saw.
They send the message, but they're very moderate and measured in their tone.
Absolutely. As I said, they'd be absolutely horrified if there was a shooting war between Greece and Turkey in this part of the world. And bear in mind that Russia has, at the moment, its relations with Greece are not actually terribly good. Greece having now clearly and strongly aligned itself with the United States. But having said that, the Russians do have certain feelings towards Greece. But over and beyond that, Russia has extremely close relations with Egypt. Egypt is a very friendly country. It too is pitted against Turkey in this issue, in this conflict. And the Russians also have been backing General Haftar. So from the Russian point of view, a conflict that sets Turkey against not just Greece, but against Egypt, Israel, and General Haftar would be a horrifying one. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, if the Russians will do everything they can to prevent it happening.
All right, Alexander, finish out the video by touching upon France's role. Macron has come out very strong. In my opinion, the EU has come out very strong against Turkey, but the EU to me is toothless.
Oh, absolutely.
France is a strong military power, and they've expressed a great deal of interest in Libya and in backing the LNA. And Macron has come out very strongly against what Erdogan is doing. Also get into the fact that you have Cyprus and Greece now tethered not only to the U.S., but to Israel. And so Israel is intimately involved now in what's going on in the Mediterranean. You touched upon the military alliances that are forming against Erdogan briefly, but get into it a little bit, what this really means.
Right, let's first of all talk about President Macron of France. I mean, Macron is positioning himself, as we've discussed many times on this program, as the successor to Angela Merkel as the leader of Europe. He is the passionate integrationist and Europeanist. He wants a centralized Europe controlled by him, with himself as the, you know, the great leader of Europe, if you like. Now, from his point of view, France is the country which, after Britain leaves the European Union, which it formally will do in January 2020, in a few weeks' time, France will be the only European country with a strong military. None of the other countries, not even Germany, have any strong military. And of course, France also has a tradition of diplomacy and a history of involvement in the Middle East. And Macron, who is a, shall we say, ambitious man. I mean, he is in some ways as ambitious and as grandiose in his thinking as Macron, as Erdogan is, has been looking increasingly at raising France's profile around the world. I would also add, by the way, that France has a very close historic connection with Greece. I mean, if you know about Greek foreign policy, the Greeks always tend to see France as an important ally and friend. So, surprise, surprise, he has become involved in this conflict. Bear in mind that Macron and Erdogan don't like each other. Erdogan and Macron had this extraordinary quarrel at the NATO summit in England just a few days ago, in which, you know, Erdogan said that, you know, Macron was probably the one who's really brain dead as opposed to NATO. I mean, they were incredibly rude. And Macron has pretty much also ruled out any possibility of Turkey ever joining the EU, and has criticized Turkish policy towards the Kurds. So here we have two, you know, inflated egos, Macron and Erdogan, up against each other. But beneath it, a history of French power and diplomacy in this part of the world. France was the colonial power that used to govern Syria and Lebanon. France has a strong military, and it has close ties with Greece. France is also very interested in Libya. It's had a very strong interest in Libyan oil. And it's also got very strong connections with General Haftar. And of course, it was the country that took the initiative in the regime change war, which brought down Colonel Gaddafi. So there's lots of undercurrents that are being played out here. It is completely natural at many levels that the French are aligning with the Greeks and the Egyptians and the Cypriots and General Haftar against Erdogan, and and they're pulling the rest of the EU with them. So that's France. Israel has, of course, this very strong connection now with Cyprus and Greece, because, of course, they're also involved in these gas exploration projects and development projects in the Eastern Mediterranean. This has been the close sort of tie-up that has been happening between Greece, Cyprus, and Israel to develop this this large natural gas field that has been discovered in this part of the world. And of course, that sets Israel against Turkey, which is trying to claim this territory as its own. Now, the history here between Israel and Turkey is also interesting, because of course, Israel and Turkey used to be quite close friends. Historically, Turkey was one of the very few Muslim countries that had, you know, diplomatic relations with Israel and recognized Israel. That was when Turkey conceived of itself as a strongly secular country. Erdogan has changed that entirely. He supports the Palestinian movement. He's been much more critical of Israel. Turkish-Israeli relations have deteriorated very significantly since Erdogan became president of, leader of Turkey. So unsurprisingly, you see the Israelis, both for economic and commercial reasons, but also for geostrategic and security ones, aligning with Greece and Cyprus against Erdogan here. And lastly, Egypt, which is a country which you might expect to have good relations with Turkey, which has also historically tended to have good relations with Turkey. It too has reasons to be critical of Turkey. First of all, the present Egyptian government is the outlet. General Sisi is the leader of Egypt. He came to power because the Egyptian military and the Egyptian ruling class are totally opposed within Egypt to the Muslim Brotherhood, and they launched a coup to overthrow the Muslim government, the Muslim Brotherhood government of the former Egyptian president, President Morsi. So they obviously disapprove of and oppose the Muslim Brotherhood government in Tripoli, the NGA, which you referred to. And they are always going to be skeptical of President Erdogan, who is closely aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood, and who now is aligning Turkey in alliance with the Muslim Brotherhood in Libya. It's not a coincidence that the LNA is based in Tobruk, which is close to the Egyptian border. The Egyptians have a good reason to back it. So again, Erdogan is acting in a way that is completely contrary to what the Egyptian government and the Egyptian military and those sections in Egyptian society want to see, because he is in effect perceived by them to be both a geopolitical challenger, because he's seeking to extend Turkish influence into regions close to Egypt, which Egypt has historically considered itself to be, you know, its own sphere. I mean, it's, you know, the seas around Egypt itself. But he is also an ideological adversary. So, of course, they oppose him. So all of these governments are now slowly interconnecting with each other. Greece is anchored in NATO. It is a member of the European Union. So that makes it close to France, which is a member also of NATO and of the European Union. It is now in a close economic relationship with Israel as part of these gas development projects in the Eastern Mediterranean. So that creates a unity of interest there. And it also, by the way, Greece has also historically had close and good relations with Egypt, which has its own reasons to be alarmed at what about what Erdogan is doing. Erdogan is taking on everybody. He's taking on everybody in this region.
Why did he insert himself in this?
Well,
he didn't make any. I mean, I understand from the beginning of the video how you laid things out, but it just doesn't make it, especially after Syria, it doesn't make any sense, this move.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say he is not someone who has a great deal of knowledge of this region. As I said, he wildly overestimates Turkish power, and he has a domestic political constituency that he's constantly trying to keep mobilized by taking these steps. And he projects himself as the champion of the Muslim Brotherhood across the whole Middle East. So he does have a political reason to do this, but also, as I said, he's never, I think, really understood the limits of Turkish power, and has always this neo-Ottoman foreign policy that he talks about is one that Turkey doesn't have the strength to pursue. And he's never really been able to come to terms with that.
So there is a strong domestic play.
Oh, yeah. With Erdogan, there always is. I mean, to be very clear, Erdogan may not understand his region very well. He does understand Turkey very well. The reason he has been in power in Turkey for so long is because he's built up a very powerful political constituency within Turkey and has a lot of support within the amongst the Turkish people. This is a fact which outsiders need to understand about him. But it's a political constituency that he needs to keep mobilized, particularly at a time like this, when there are political and economic problems within Turkey itself. So he's got all of these stresses and things to balance out. But that doesn't change the fact that this is a reckless and wildly overambitious and extremely irresponsible and frankly dangerous policy.
Hey, Alexander Mercurius, Editor-in-Chief of The Duran. Thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell to make sure you get notifications when we publish a new video. Look for us on iTunes and on SoundCloud to get an audio copy of this video as well. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donations really help keep this channel up and running. And check us out on Duran Video, our own video platform, duranvideo.com, where we post all our videos there. And also on BitChute, the free speech video platform, where we also post every video we do on BitChute. And on Telegram, we post everything going on in the Duran community. So download the Telegram app and subscribe to our Telegram channel. And we are running our big holiday promotion, Alexander. DRN20, put that in the box. The checkout box on the final page before you make your purchase of some great Duran merchandise like our
great mugs. Duran merchandise.
We can help you untangle complicated situations
absolutely. Like this amazing mug of which I've been drinking another a British tea from. It's called Fort Mason, by the way. It's which is a really good strong British styled tea developed, I believe, in the 1920s. And it's rather rich and rather spicy, and it's perfect, again, to drink from a mug like this. Now, for those who don't know, this is the coat of arms of Russia's Alpha Force, which is a Russia's elite special forces unit. Indeed, we'll come to Alex's mug, which you can also see. That's the double-headed eagle of the Russian Federation. But it's a special forces unit equivalent, if you like, to the Delta Force in the United States or the British SAS. The Russians send it all around the world to do their thing, their bidding. They've been active, apparently, in Syria and in Afghanistan and in all sorts of places. We talked about great powers. Great powers have forces like this in their sort of military toolkit. Turkey, for example, doesn't. There is no real equivalent in Turkey to a special forces unit of this kind of caliber. But let's stress our mugs. We've got amazing mugs, 15 ounces, beautiful porcelain mugs. They keep us, as Alex rightly says, refreshed and vigorous through the long watches of the night so that we can do our videos and research them and learn about what's going on in the world so that we can then unpack it and analyze it, which, to be very clear, most of the work we do, we obviously have to do, if you like, our back offices rather than on our videos. Our videos are, if you like, the culmination of what we do. And we're able to do it because we drink sustainable and marvelous drinks from mugs like this. And as I've discussed, you can drink lots of things from it, not just tea, not just coffee. You can also drink, since this is the festive season, beer, and I recently did try champagne it was a British sparkling wine called Night Ember. You can drink from a mug like this also, and it does keep it cool, and it's actually great for that, if I may say. So we have mugs. We also have these amazing shirts, like the polo shirt I'm wearing now, and you saw on Alex's magic mug, the double-headed eagle of the Russian Federation. There it is. And of course, we also have our own double-headed eagle, which is that of the Duran, which is able to see in both directions, both to the east and the west, so that we can discuss and analyze what happens in all parts of the world. But our shirts, all 100% cotton, all beautifully made, all extraordinarily comfortable, all proper and right for all times and all seasons, including this festive season of the year. We don't just have these amazing polo shirts. We also have T-shirts, both long-sleeved and short-sleeved. We've got V-neck shirts. We've got hoodies. We've got stickers. We've got hats. We've got amazing things. Perfect, as Alex rightly said, at this time of the year, you can buy them as presents, both for yourself and for your family and for your friends. DRN20 is the discount code, as Alex was telling you. Alex will explain again how you can access these things, obtain these discounts, buy yourself these marvelous things. So don't hold back. Help the Duran. Help yourself. Help your friends. Alex will tell you how.
DRN20, the final page of the checkout process. You'll see the box. Put that coupon in there and you'll get 20% off all merchandise at duranshop.com. Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of the Duran. Thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.